Good afternoon. It is 1:01 p.m. on 4/20. Presenting to us today is Representative McCabe. Committee members with us today, Representative McCabe, Representative McKay, Representative Drummond, Representative Kronk, Vice Chair Hannon, and myself, Rep. Hopkins. Assisting us today for the House Transportation Committee is our recording secretary, Jamie Buhner, and our LAO moderator, Marissa Truitt. Thank you. I'd like to ask those participating remotely on the phones and on Teams to please mute yourselves and your microphones when you're not actively speaking so we can get a clear recording for those proceedings for posterity. For those at home, all of today's presentations and bill packets and information can be found by visiting akleg.gov and finding today's House Transportation Committee hearing under the Daily Schedule tab. Go to the bill, click Documents. Are there any questions before we move on to business today? Outstanding. Thank you. So we have two bills before us today. First, we're going to hear House Bill 87, an electric-assisted bicycles, by Representative Wohl and his trusty staff, Ashley Straub, and House Bill 166 on one license plate per vehicle by Representative McCabe. It is the intent of the chair to hear both these bills, take public comment, close public comment, and then set the bills aside for any or for further consideration before bringing them up at a soon to be future date. Are there any questions?
Sorry.
Doesn't look like it. First up, we'll go ahead and have HB 87, electric assisted bicycles. Ashley Carrick, I called you by your previous name. I apologize for that before. Representative Wohl will join us as soon as he gets a break from his committee that he's currently in. Ms. Carrick, can you put yourself on the record and proceed with your presentation?
Thank you. For the record, Ashley Carrick, staff to Representative Wohl, and he is running just a little over in Ways and Means next door, so he should be joining us shortly. He may reiterate some of the points I'm going to make here, but I just wanted to start by noting a couple of things. First off, HB 87 did have a previous iteration and was House Bill 123 before. The bill in the last legislative session was actually awaiting calendaring on the Senate floor when COVID hit and we adjourned for the year. So we became invested in this bill, and it got very close to passage last time around. And essentially what this bill would do is define electric-assisted bicycles in statute. Currently, there is no description, and e-bikes can be regulated as electric personal motor vehicles, or motor-driven cycles. They are not listed anywhere specifically in statute, even though 33 states now define e-bikes. Some states also use a three-tiered system, which we'll get a chance to look at in a moment, and this bill would keep the classifications of bikes limited to those requiring pedal assistance. And I'll also touch upon that in a moment. Another note is that this effort is supported by local municipalities. For example, the municipality of Anchorage added a definition for low-speed electric bikes in 2016. And the basic definition for e-bikes in this bill would include those that are human propulsion, no more than 750 watts of power, and provide assistance only when a rider is pedaling, up to a maximum speed of 28 miles per hour. And at this point, I'm going to briefly walk through a short presentation we have, sort of looking at electric-assisted bikes and a little bit more about this bill, and then if the committee would like, I can also go through our sectional. So on slide two of the presentation, essentially HB 87 has three goals. Representative Wohl would like to see electric-assisted bicycles regulated as bicycles, update the statutes to reflect the technological advances we now have by having electric-assisted bicycles, and this will also help bring clarity to consumers and retailers on electric bicycle laws and the fact that they can be used on our trails and pathways. So the new definition for electric-assisted bicycle in this bill, I briefly mentioned this before, but it would be a bicycle that is designed to travel with no more than three wheels in contact with the ground, have fully operative pedals for propulsion, and is equipped with an electric motor that does not exceed 750 watts and only provides assistance while a rider is pedaling. There are electric-assisted bicycles and classes of bicycles where you can get assistance when the rider is not pedaling, and so we're specifically excluding them from the definition. And the e-bikes we would be defining in statute would stop providing assistance once a rider reaches a speed of 28 miles an hour at a maximum. The next slide on slide three shows an earlier version of a map showing which states do define electric bicycles. And this was where we get into this strict definition are the green states, and then the yellow are those states which define an e-bike and have a three-tiered classification system. And just in the interest of transparency, this was a request from People for Bikes. People for Bikes has a lobbying and advocacy wing that is focusing on having three different classes. Class one would be equipped with a motor providing assistance only when a rider is pedaling up to 20 miles per hour at maximum speed. Class two is for bicycles equipped with a motor ceasing to provide assistance when a rider reaches 20 miles an hour, and whether the rider is pedaling or not. And finally, there's a class three for bicycles equipped with a motor provide assistance when pedaling only and cease to provide assistance when the bike reaches 28 miles an hour. So with this bill and our definition, the goal would be to keep it to just that class one or three definition. So bikes that will reach a maximum speed of either 20 or 28 miles an hour with pedal assistance. We would be excluding class two bikes. And we can go into that in more detail if the committee requests. And I also want to note on this slide that this map has been updated since this presentation was put on BASIS. There are actually 33 states which now allow for electric-assisted bicycles and have them defined in statute. And so we should have an updated map to provide to the committee in the next day or so.
Ms. Carrick, Representative Hannon had a question.
Yeah.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm just trying to follow along. So if this bill passed, would you then say we are a green, a defines an e-bike, but we are not a yellow using a three-tier classification because you're having a two-tier classification? And I'm...
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, the class system, class one, two, and three, is a retailer distinction between different types of bikes. It's typically used in that setting. And our bill just says that the bikes would be allowed only with pedal assistance up to 28 miles an hour. And so that would include, in that definition, class one or two. And if we were to be, if this bill were to pass and we were to be added to this map, we would be a green state on here rather than a yellow, because we wouldn't have those class two throttle motorbikes not providing pedal assistance as an option.
Okay.
Follow?
I guess I'm looking for what the why some states are going to a full three tier, and you just used the term it was a retailer classification. But I'm curious as to the policy differences that our states are drawing, because if really it's immaterial and it's truly just a retailer, then it doesn't matter. Then the green and yellow are all lumped together. They all use some kind of a classification. But I'm, you know, generally NCSL, where you're citing the map, uses some policy measures mm-hmm. as part of the definition. So I'm hoping you could draw us to that.
Yes, through the chair to Representative Hannon, this is a policy distinction as well. I apologize. It's used in retail settings. It's also used in policy to distinguish between different bicycle types.
Thank you.
Follow up later. Thank you.
I had two questions, and now they flew out of my mind. Why is 28 miles per hour a threshold that they use for cutting off electrical assistance?
Mm-hmm. To the chair, the 28 miles per hour is a standard that's been used in That's been used in state policy. I think it's also part of how electric bicycles are manufactured, and just sort of the typical electric bicycle will either be a 20-mile-per-hour threshold or a 28-mile-per-hour threshold. Mm. So I'm fairly certain that that's where that specific distinction comes from, but we can certainly follow up with that.
All right. That's okay. Thank you. Go ahead. Yeah.
So moving to slide 4, just wanted to show a couple examples of what an electric-assisted bicycle is and what it is not. So an electric-assisted bicycle does have a battery, an electric motor, and it has fully operable pedals. These are all really important distinctions to draw between an e-bike and, say, a moped or an electric scooter or a dirt bike even. And then this slide is just here to show that even though in slide 4 you can fully see the motor, on a lot of electric bicycles you can't see all of that infrastructure. So e-bikes have evolved dramatically in the past 10 years or so, and they look more modern, they look more like a regular bike, but this is an example showing that e-bikes can have all of the infrastructure internally, so it can be difficult to sort of point out an e-bike and know that that's what you're looking at. On this next slide, slide 6, these are a couple examples of what is not an e-bike. So the reason why a moped or a dirt bike is not an e-bike is they do not have fully operable pedals. You can see on the image on the right there on the sidewalk that there are pedals on that bike. However, pedal assistance to operate that scooter is not required. And also on these other kinds of devices, the engine size will vary pretty dramatically. And at this point, I'm happy to walk through the sectional to go through a couple of the definitions that are in the bill and distinguishing e-bikes from other kinds of devices, or answer any other questions the committee has.
I believe we have Department of Motor Vehicles, Division of Motor Vehicles online. If anybody had any questions for them, we have Jeffrey Schmitz there. I guess I'll ask a quick question of Mr. Schmitz. Are you available, Mr. Schmitz? Can you hear us?
Yes, I am.
Outstanding. Thank you.
Director, Alaska DMV.
Great. Thank you so much, Director. This is Representative Hopkins. My question is, what sort of registrations are required under this legislation for the type 2 bikes that are not being included in this legislation, the ones where you do not have to pedal to move the bike? What type of registration would be required for that, if any?
Well, Mr. Chair, committee members, that's a good question. This bill sort of defines that these e-bikes are not defined by, they're not motorcycles, so they really don't, they fall outside of the realm of what the scope of what DMV is charges. So they don't need to be registered. They don't fall under any particular category. If there's a question on whether or not the type 2 bike or a bike is considered to be a motorcycle, and we have a question on that, a lot of times we will have to ourselves, our staff will have to call the manufacturer or research whether or not it's considered to be the manufacturer considers it to be a motorcycle. But if it falls into an e-bike category, it really falls outside of our scope and they're not registered.
Well, thank you. I guess there's a question in there. I think I can grasp where that question is. Did you have a question, Representative Hannon? Go for it.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Schmidt, how would you know, I guess I'm trying to figure out who would come in seeking to register that you then research to see if it's a registerable bike? Because I presume that most people who have e-bikes don't even think that they should get a license or get it registered. But are you finding that people are coming in and want to register an e-bike like a motorcycle?
Mr. Chair, committee members, no, we're not really finding that at all. That would be a rare circumstance where somebody would come in and say, you know, I've got an e-bike, but it's not self-propelled. I drive it around, and there's special provisions behind it. You know, if there's a new product or new, you know, bike that's out there, we may need to take some time to research whether or not, you know, it's considered to be a motorcycle. If we got a question at all, it would just be from somebody wanting clarification as to what category it would fall into. But it would be pretty rare that we would get that question.
Follow up. Have you heard from other states as this issue? There are 22 other states that already have some regulation of e-bikes, and I presume in those processes, Division of Motor Vehicles is where most of that dialogue or statute changes comes in other states, not just us. So have you had any insights or guidance from other states how to best handle it, or is it, if it's human-assisted, it doesn't have anything to do with DMV because it's not a motorcycle? Has it been pretty clear-cut, or?
Mr. Chair, Madam Representative, committee members, it's not clear-cut. In fact, a lot of states handle these things differently, so much so that our national body, the Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators across the country, have asked for, you know, more clarification from a nationwide standpoint in terms of what would be a best practice. Right now, the best practice is each state is deciding on their own. And in fact, with respect to e-bikes, a lot of the jurisdictional type of rules around those are really left up to municipalities and local jurisdictions, because they're not considered to be motor vehicles. They really don't fall under, you know, regular motor vehicle statutes and rules. So this is sort of an emerging area, particularly when these newer e-bikes are becoming, you know, possibly they could go certain speed limits, and people are concerned about that. So it really has to do with the product itself and the particular manufacturer of that particular bike. And that's sort of how we handle this. Sort of a newer area, but if it's we consider it to be a bike, it's something that DMV really doesn't have anything to do with. If it's a motorcycle, well, then it would have to be, meet the qualifications for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schmitz. It doesn't look like we have any other questions for you right now. Ms. Carrick, why don't you go through the sectional of the bill and we can get a good feel for what's in it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Through the chair, again, Ashley Carrick, staff to Representative Wohl. And just to walk through the sectional for us. So in section one, we are amending statute to state that the definition of motor vehicles excludes electric-assisted bicycles. In section two, we are saying that electric-assisted bicycles should be regulated as bicycles in regards to operation on sidewalks, paths, trails, etc. Section 3 amends 28.05.011 to say that electric-assisted bicycles should be regulated as bicycles in terms of rules of the road. In other words, e-bikes are not to ride. They're not subject to the same regulations as motor vehicles on the road, and includes that e-bikes should be allowed to be regulated by municipal ordinances separately as well. Section 4 states that electric-assisted bicycles are not required to register as a vehicle. Section 5 would state that electric-assisted bicycles don't fall under the same definition of an electric personal motor vehicle. And just jumping to Section 5 of the bill, electric-assisted motor vehicles are those that are for assistive mobility devices or self-balancing vehicles with two non-tandem wheels. So this could be, for example, a motorized wheelchair, possibly a Segway, not to exceed a speed of more than 15 miles an hour. Section 6 of the bill states that an electric-assisted bicycle is not a motor vehicle, and jumping to Section 6 of the bill, again, a motor vehicle is defined as a vehicle which is self-propelled, except for those moved by human or animal power. So this would be like a car or a truck. And Section 7 of the bill states that electric-assisted bicycles are also not a motor-driven cycle. And looking at Section 7 of the bill, this includes vehicles such as motorcycles, motor scooters, and like a dirt bike or motorized bicycle with a higher speed. Section 8 of the bill defines electric-assisted bicycles. And we went through that definition, but essentially defines them as those designed to travel with no more than three wheels in contact with the ground, with fully operative pedals, having an electric motor with a power output not exceeding 750 watts, and providing assistance only when a rider is pedaling, ceasing to provide that assistance once the bicycle reaches a speed, a maximum speed of 28 miles an hour. And then finally, Section 9 just states that electric-assisted bicycles should be regulated as bicycles in regards to operation in public use areas. Again, looking at how these bikes travel on trails, et cetera.
Thank you very much, Ms. Carrick. Representative Wool, welcome to committee. Please go ahead and join your trustee staff at the table, and feel free to make any comments if you got any. We can keep going, whatever you want.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the House Transportation Committee. My name is Representative Adam Wolf from District 5 in Fairbanks. I'm sorry I was late. We were passing another bill out of committee. And I'm assuming Ms. Carrick gave you the full presentation, so I don't really want to duplicate what she said. My only statement will be, and I've said in previous committees when this bill was being heard, and I'm sure Ms. Carrick mentioned that this bill did pass the House last year. The reason people ask, why are you carrying this bill? And the reason is, this is one of those good stories, I believe, when you're a constituent, or in this case, a former employee of mine, but someone I've known in Fairbanks for quite a while, approached me and said, hey, I have a situation, maybe you can help me. And that situation was, he was a chef at a restaurant riding an electric bicycle home at the end of a shift and got pulled over, and this guy did not have a current license. And the officer said, I'm sorry, you can't drive this vehicle, it's a motorized vehicle. And he says, you need a license. He says, well, it's an electric bicycle. And that's where the dispute started. And so I told him I'd try to help him on this, where if someone is riding an electric bicycle, they aren't required to have a driver's license. And for whatever reason, they may not have a license. This will solve that problem, as well as many others. So I appreciate the committee hearing the bill.
Certainly, Representative Wool, thanks for bringing it back forward when it almost got to the finish line last year. Representative Hannon has a question.
Thank you. Through the speak, you left us hanging. We need to know how the story concluded. Was this case dismissed, or is it, where did Alaska courts or Fairbanks courts fall down on this?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, he wasn't arrested. I think he had to walk the bicycle home. I think that was the. I'll find out. I'll do my research and try to find out. But he approached me and said, "Can we fix this situation?" Because he did want to commute to work. Electric bicycle is a lot easier to go up hills, especially at the end of a long day. He wanted to continue using it without having a driver's license.
That makes sense.
Thank you.
We will wait with bated breath until we hear again. I have a question for.
Recognize
yeah, thanks. Representative Sponholz joined us at 1:25. Thank you, Representative. Welcome. Mr. Schmitz from DMV, this is Chair Hopkins. I have a question. Looking at Section 6 of the bill, changing the name of a motor, or the definition of a motor vehicle, would that definition in Section 6 indicate that a electric bicycle, which you do not have to pedal to move, would be then a motorized vehicle or a motor vehicle under this definition?
Madam Chair, committee members, it's a good question. I mean, this particular section in Section 6 talks about whether or not a motor vehicle means a vehicle which is self-propelled, except for a vehicle moved by human or animal power. I think the assumption of this bill is to further define in the electric bike category, which was primarily self-propelled, that it would be considered not to be a motor vehicle, and therefore it would not fall under the categories of the regular motor vehicle rules. So is that your question?
Actually, the opposite. I was wondering if the type of electric-powered bicycle that you do not need to pedal to move along, the one that would be a Type 2 that they are not defining in this bill, not actively defining, would this Section 6 then therefore include the other type of the Type 2 bike that does not require pedaling to move? Would that give you the definition that you need, or would you need a explicit definition to answer your question about what the Type 2s qualify as? And if you don't know that answer, we can probably get something from law in writing or not even worry about it. So.
Yeah, the representative and committee members, we would, this would fall under the category of if we came across a tight vehicle like this and it was a question of whether or not it was a bike or it was a motorcycle, we would have to probably check with the manufacturer to get more information about the minimum speeds and all of that kind of stuff. If it truly is a self-propelled vehicle, it would fall under the motorcycle categories. But again, this is we would probably need to do some research and do some more dig up some more information about this.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Schmitz. We'll let you work on that yourself then. Any other questions from members of the committee? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. And I think this is back to Representative Wool. It, has Mr. Schmitz, under that question, really come to the crux of the issue that we're looking to define when is it a motorcycle, therefore needing a license and registration, and when is it a electric bike where we don't need license and registration? Is that the crux of the issue?
Through the chair to Representative Hannon. Yeah, I guess in a nutshell, I mean, motorized vehicles have been around for a while and have been defined by law. Electric bicycles came along more recently, and we're trying to extricate that from the definition of motorized vehicle by giving it a specific definition. It has to have a motor of a certain size, no larger, certain kind of wheel configuration, and so on, so that it still has pedals. Functional pedals, and even the type 2 vehicle bicycle type that Chair Hopkins was referencing also have to have functional pedals, even though you can propel them without actually pedaling. With the type 1 and type 3, you have to pedal and then the motor will assist you, but once you stop pedaling, there's no more assist. So even the type 2 have to have functional pedals. It can't just be a scooter, for example, with no pedals on it. So yeah, I think the crux of the issue is defining these as a separate category of electric bicycles, which are essentially treated like bicycles. And so if you're in a location that says, you know, you're on a bike path, you can ride a bike, unless otherwise specified by local ordinance, you can also ride an e-bike on there. And that's really, and certain municipalities have said you can have bicycles but not e-bikes on certain areas. But a lot of places, if you can ride a bicycle there, you can ride an e-bike. If you can ride a bicycle down the street without a license and a license plate, you can ride an e-bike down the street. So we're just trying to coalesce electric bicycles with bicycles, even though they have a small motor.
Thank you. Any further questions from members of the committee? Doesn't look like it, so we're going to go ahead and open public testimony. Anybody in the room want to testify on e-bikes? It doesn't look like it. Do we have anybody online? No, we do not. Thank you, Marissa. We do not have anybody else online for public testimony. I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. For House Bill 87 is now closed. We are going to go ahead and set this bill aside for right now, and we're going to set an amendment deadline for Friday at noon for this piece of legislation. If you guys have any changes, please get those to us by Friday at noon. Thank you very much, Ms. Carrick, Representative Wool, for coming on down here for e-bikes today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks to the committee.
Certainly. Next up, we're going to go ahead and take House Bill 166 on one license plate per vehicle. With us today is Representative McCabe and his aide, William Gamble, who I believe is on, there he is, on Teams. It's working so far. We can see you there. Mr. Gamble, I just want to just ask you to keep make sure you're muted until we... Oh, yeah. Hold on. Brief it easier. I'll start back over with those sentences. With us today is Representative McCabe and his aide, William Gamble, on Teams. And of course, Angie's here as well for more assistance. Representative McCabe, why don't you please go ahead and put yourself on the record and give us the opening presentation for your bill.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Chair Hopkins and Vice Chair Hannon. For the record, and the members of the House Transportation Committee, for the record, my name is Kevin McCabe. I'm representative for House District 8, and I'm here to put House Bill 166, which is to change Alaskans' requirement for two plates per vehicle to one plate. So this bill, at its true nature, at its heart, it's a budget bill. Many folks that I have talked to have asked for surgical savings in our budget, not just broad-based savings. So in looking at this bill at the request of a constituent, I discovered that we almost never issue tickets for lack of a front license plate. And even when we do, they are generally a fix-it ticket that bring no revenue into the state. So removing the requirement for a front license plate or for two license plates is a fiscal savings of $332,000 and virtually has no other effect. It doesn't affect the program, it doesn't affect the service, it doesn't affect jobs. It's a DMV contract. And as you'll see in the fiscal note, it's a large cost savings to the state of Alaska, $332,000. So I could talk about the vehicles if you'd like. I could talk about Department of Public Safety issues. Really, when I got down to it, when we started looking at it last night, this is a budget savings bill. And it really doesn't have much more effect than that. It will bring Alaska into line with other states by there's 20 other states that do not require a front license plate, and there is I believe six more two more that are contemplating it, and two more that are in the process of removing it. So one of the things that concerned me that started us down this path is the fact that the newer cars have sensors and technology in the front bumpers that, such as lane change technology and radar to prevent you from running into other cars, and that is affected apparently by putting on an aftermarket license plate holder drilling into the bumper, as well as the aesthetics of having a brand new $50,000 or $60,000 truck that doesn't have a factory provided front license plate mount, and now you have to drill into the bumper of your brand new truck, which creates an avenue and a pathway for rust, especially in the wintertime with the urea that we put on the roads and that sort of thing. So it just seemed to make sense all the way around. Electric vehicles, the coming electric vehicles, also have little room up front for, they don't need the massive front end like the regular vehicles do. They're kind of narrower and they're longer. And the area for a license plate, especially the standard license plate design, is rapidly going away. And of course, those are the prime cars for the sensors as well, such as the Tesla and those type of cars. In fact, I think Tesla just don't even come with a license plate holder. You have to install an aftermarket one if you're going to do it. So there are some public safety concerns. We did talk to Alaska State Troopers, and they made the point that they oftentimes use the front license plate, such as a camera. If you're pulling up to the 7-Eleven and you're going to rob the 7-Eleven, say, and the camera will catch the front end or the front part of the vehicle. I'm not so sure how much that is actually, how true that actually is. If I was going to rob a 7-Eleven, I'd either do it in a stolen vehicle or I'd change the plates or take them off. So Not that I would do that.
Probably a smarter criminal than many.
But the point being is that the front plate is typically the one that's stolen. If they're going to steal a plate off of your car and use it in a crime, it will be the front plate, because you never look at the front plate. When you come out from the store, you're pulled into a parking spot, you see your rear plate, you would notice if your rear plate was missing, but how often do you go around the front or and check on your front plate? So that seems to be out the target for thieves oftentimes, because other you don't notice it and you won't report it missing. So in closing, and I'll let Bill Gamble run through the sectional analysis if you want, I just like to say that this one just seemed to make sense to me. A constituent brought it to my attention, and so we put it forward. And in investigating it, the further we got down the line, the further we realized that it really was a surgical sort of budget consideration. It would just require very minor change to our statutes, and really no change to the way the police departments and the state troopers conduct business. There are folks online as well that can answer questions if you want. So,
certainly, Representative McCabe, thank you. Did your staff have any comments or presentations, or is it just what you said and ready for questions?
If you want to go through the sectional, Bill Gamble is more than willing to do that.
Mr. Gamble, why don't you go ahead and run through the sectional with us? There's enough in here that it'd be nice to just know what parts of the bill there are. So please put yourself on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Hopkins, Vice Chair Hannon, committee members. Thank you for hearing House Bill 166. For the record, my name is William Gamble, staff to Representative Kevin McCabe of House District 8. And I'm here to help Representative present House Bill 166. And just to summarize the sectional analysis, it's just takes language where it is plural at this point and changes it into singular where applicable, and adds it to plural language also in one of the sections. So in summary, sections 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, and 10 amend their corresponding statute sections to conform with the singular intent of the bill, changing the language from plural to singular. And then there's an added section 6, to Alaska Statute 28-10-161 that provides an individual or organization the option to return a plate should they be issued two plates. And that pretty much sums up the sectional analysis for House Bill 166. I'd be more than happy to go through it line by line if you would like. Other than that, I'm just here to help the representative answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Gamble. I don't think we have line by line. We're all right. Representative McKay has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative McCabe, you might want to mention the fiscal note impact of this.
So you're talking about the $332,000, right? Yeah, so it's a negative fiscal note. And we did talk to the Department of Administration, and this is what they came up with. I think they're online as well.
It actually saved the state money.
All right. Representative McCabe had a question. You didn't have a question. No? Oh, I thought you did. Sorry. Representative Sponholz.
All right. Thank you. through the chair, Representative McCabe, I think we're always interested in finding ways to save money, but you said that there was sort of no change to the way that law enforcement would do business, but that there were potentially some public safety concerns. Can you talk about the consultation that you did with the Department of Public Safety and with local law enforcement around the state of Alaska?
Sure. We didn't talk to any local law enforcement, since this was a state bill, and I don't really have any local law enforcement in my district. All my law enforcement is done by the state troopers. So we did talk to the state troopers. I think is Lieutenant Olson online? We did talk to him as well, and we went over all of got his concerns before we went forward with this, as well as all the other states that have done this have sort of had the same discussion with their law enforcement. So as far as the front plate use, and of course law enforcement's going to want as much identifying things on your car, whether it be color or license plates, as they possibly can. There were some that talked about, say, if you're heading towards the vehicle as a policeman and you have a bolo, say, and you're looking for a particular license plate number, they say that the front license plate is key to that, except the front license plate isn't lighted. So in Alaska, in the dark, in the middle of the night, that's pretty hard to see. Oftentimes the front license plate either isn't there, it's obscured, or it's bent from hitting the snowbanks. So some of those types of concerns, we didn't discount them, that's the wrong word, but we felt that the cost savings and the fact that they have only issued, in 2018, 2019, they issued one citation each year, and in 2020 they issued five citations statewide for a missing front license plate. So if they used the front license plate, say, to stop somebody, and then that somebody had drug paraphernalia or drugs in their car, and they arrested the guy for that, you would think that we would see that citation for the missing plate as key in the arrest, and we just don't see it. So,
sorry, were you finished?
Well, so once again, if we're not going to enforce the law, and the law really has no teeth, we're not using it, then why not save the money? That was sort of my thought process.
You follow up, Representative Sponholz. And we also have Duda of the State Troopers online if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very interested in law enforcement's position on this. And you might not have local law enforcement in your district, but I do. And my father was a member of that law enforcement department for 20 years. And so I feel pretty strongly about making sure that we have, you know, a clear understanding about how this impacts law enforcement. And just because there aren't citations being issued doesn't mean that it's not used as an investigative tool. You know, as you cited, the 7-Eleven, you know, the quick stop or whatever example that was that you had that that actually makes it easier to be able to, you know, track down and arrest people. And so I don't think that the number of citations, I think law enforcement are not in the habit of issuing low-level citations unless, you know, absolutely necessary. It's just very, very rare for them to do that. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a utility for having that front license plate for the purposes of identifying vehicles, drivers, identifying folks that have potentially committed crime. And so I really would like to hear from the Department of Public Safety. And also I'd like to hear from local law enforcement across the state about how they feel about this.
Lieutenant Olson, are you available online to make any comments from the state troopers regarding the legislation?
Chair Hopkins, this is Lieutenant Eric Olson. I am available, sir.
Thank you. Did you hear the question? Would you mind putting yourself on the record as you just did and letting us know about what the state troopers' thoughts are on the legislation and how it would impact your job?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair Hopkins and Vice Chair Hannon. My name is Eric Olson. I'm a lieutenant for the Alaska State Troopers. I started my career in 1996. I'm currently assigned to DPS headquarters in Anchorage. As far as the Alaska State Troopers, or law enforcement officers rely heavily on identifying vehicles with license plates, both the front and the rear license plate. Oftentimes, we conduct surveillance, and we looked at parked vehicles or moving cars. At times, we only see the front portion of a motor vehicle. So therefore, the front license plate is a very important means of identifying that particular vehicle. At times, if we get a report of some type of incident and there's a description of the vehicle, we're responding to the call or location where the incident occurred. At times, most of the time, we're given the license plate number of that vehicle, along with a brand, make, and model, and color, and so forth. And so we're actively looking for all of those different characteristics, especially the license plate of that particular vehicle that clearly identifies the vehicle in question. I know at times our law enforcement officers, they have multiple vehicles. Like some towns in Alaska, they may have 500 or more red-colored Subarus, and by having a specific license plate, they're able to very dramatically isolate and identify the vehicle in question. As Representative McKay said earlier, it is popular for criminals to steal license plates of other vehicles. but we've seen both the front and the rear license plates stolen. And that's usually indicative of how the vehicles are parked at and where the criminal suspect is able to hide as much as possible to steal the license plate. Front license plate descriptions are often key probable cause for law enforcement officers applying for search warrants for both state and federal courts, and that could be for a variety of crimes, from homicides to sex assaults to kidnappings, assault, thefts, so forth and so on. When we respond to calls for service for citizens of the public, citizens don't have the same type of training that we do as law enforcement officers. And there's many instances throughout the state where citizens are now having to file their own police reports if they're sitting around in a municipality or being involved in a motor vehicle accident on state roadways. And due to the fact that citizens are less trained, some of the first things they notice is either license plate number and or make model color of the vehicle that happens to leave the scene if they're not able to take photos right away. Or if they do take photos, the license plate number helps us corroborate the registered owner of the vehicle as well as the make and model and so forth. So that is very important to citizens that we come in contact with and obtain information from. Sometimes those same citizens are required to provide that same information to their insurance companies, and they use cell phone photos taken by the victims of the crash to help process the claim as advice to us during our investigations. One of the main aspects of front license plates is regarding report every drunk or dangerous driver immediately or ready reports. And sometimes callers can only identify the front license plate of a motor vehicle. We find that responding to ready reports that we are preventing many deaths on the roadways and highways of Alaska if we're able to successfully intercept that vehicle before it causes more harm. There's often heinous crimes that are very high profile, such as murders and sex assaults, where the witness, the only portion that they identify of the vehicle is the license plate. And we've seen repeatedly where front license plate information is able to solve crimes of a great magnitude. There have also been many times where the front license plate was the reason an officer was able to locate a stolen vehicle. When the vehicle is traveling in the opposite direction, it will stop the vehicle and determine if the vehicle is stolen, and or we're also finding that the stolen vehicles have stolen property located within them and on narcotics. As part of the traffic stuff, we're seeing that people are often inebriated under the influence of alcohol or narcotics. We've also seen the front license plates with home security cameras, such as Ring cameras, and as the name brand and so forth. I'm not advocating for that brand, but that's a name that's repeatedly provided to law enforcement. And that particular brand and motor of camera is able to obtain pictures of the suspect vehicle as it pulls into the driveway to conduct the criminal act. For troopers in the field, they suspect that those person will commit 20 thefts of burglary for each one that we actually catch on camera. So it's a repeated type of incident crime that's taking place. With front license plate, that's helping save time, money, and manpower for law enforcement, as that gives us a specific suspect for us to start investigating. Appreciate the testimony on that. And if there's any questions from the committee, I'm more than happy to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Just I'll have a quick question. After that testimony, would you say that the Alaska State Troopers or DPS has a position on this legislation?
No, sir. We do not. However, we do support any laws and regulations pertaining to public safety.
All right. Thank you. Representative Hammond had a question. Do you have a follow-up?
Thank you. Through the chair, Lieutenant Olson, I'm not familiar with exactly how traffic light cameras work. But certainly when I see them on TV portrayed, it would be that you're running the red light and it reads your front license plate. I guess I speculate that Alaska State Troopers doesn't have any traffic cam lights, that those are mostly going to be local governments with local police departments. But do you have any familiarity with how traffic cam enforcement functions and its need for license plates on both front and back, or is that just something watching TV cops is not meshing with reality over?
Good question, Representative Hammond, through the chair. Previously, in years past, I believe there's a local municipality here in the main area of Anchorage that did have traffic light cameras, and there was a lot of public comments regarding that. As far as DPS goes, I'm speaking on behalf of DPS, I can advise that the Oscar State Troopers, we do not have any traffic cameras or license plate readers that we utilize during our law enforcement mission. And more or less, I believe that as far as my knowledge here in Alaska, I don't know of any license plate readers actively being utilized, at least either by the states and municipalities. That'd be a question for them and or the feds.
Thank you.
Do you have a follow-up, Representative?
Nope, I'm going to ask JPD.
All right, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is about the fiscal note. It seems to me that once the department doesn't spend $332,000 and reduces their inventory, they wouldn't be, again, not spending that $332,000 in subsequent years. And also, is there a revenue piece that then goes away when the second plate is not charged for, and therefore that's revenue that's not collected? If someone could tell me how that works, because I know DMV is a revenue generating agency.
Representative McCabe.
So I think I can answer that, and through the chair, thank you, Representative Drummond. So when we pay our registration for our cars, we're not paying for the plates, we're paying for the registration. Unlike other states who charge by the plate, we charge for the registration. So the registration charge would be the same, it would just be a reduced number of plates. So there would be, according to the Department of Administration, who came up with the fiscal note, there would be no loss in revenue, so to speak, from this. So the $332,000 would apparently be a savings every year over what we're doing right now. I think they said it was $664,000 to let the contract to have the plates and also to mail them. So a certain amount of the mailing and transportation of the plates would be a savings as well.
Do you follow up?
Follow up, yeah. I still don't understand how beyond the first year they would continue to not spend that $332,000. Because once they stop spending it, they don't need to stop spending it again in subsequent years.
I believe we have Department of Division of Motor Vehicles online. Mr. Schmidt, would you like to talk to that fiscal note? Is that okay, Representative Drummond?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mr. Schmidt, if you could talk to the fiscal note that you developed for this legislation, if that was your work, and please put yourself on the record when you do that.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is Jeffrey Schmitz, Director, Alaska DMV, for the record. To address the question, it's a fair point about the continued $332,000 savings beyond the first year. Certainly, the note that's there reflects 50% of what we would normally spend in an annual year, which is $664,000 is what DMV pays to have those plates produced and sent out or in our inventory. If we're only being charged half of that, certainly those costs will go down to $332,000. And the fiscal note's just trying to reflect and show the committee that fact. So once the price goes down, the cost would be what it is from fiscal year beyond that first year out. So whether you consider, it just depends on how you look at it. If you consider it to be, if we don't pass this, it'll be our annual cost will be $664,000, in perpetuity, unless it goes up, of course. And if it does pass, and if we do go down one plate, then it will be, the cost will be $332,000 moving forward. So however you want to define that, that's what the note is reflecting.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. This is Representative Hopkins. I have a follow-up question on that. The contract
that you signed to have them created and sent to Alaska as needed, is that a new contract that's signed every year, or are you locked into that those costs going forward?
Mr. Chair, committee members, we actually, our plate contract is up for renewal this summer, so it's just about to conclude. In fact, we're beginning to go into what we need to do to set up that contract again moving forward. So this would actually be a very good time for us to adjust the inventory requirements from the producer of the plates.
Thank you, Mr. Schmitz. Any other questions? Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I just have kind of a suggestion. You kind of asked the question I was going to ask there. So, you know, looking at this, I don't see an effective date on this. So I would do a conceptual amendment to possibly add an effective date if this bill passes, so the state can see immediate savings right away.
Representative Kronk, we will have an amendment deadline for Friday at 1 again. So if you could make it a real amendment, not a conceptual, that'd be swell. Thank you. I have a question. This is Chair Hopkins for Lieutenant Olson. Are you still online, Mr. Olson?
Chair Hopkins, this is Lieutenant Olson. Still available, sir.
Thank you, sir. So my question is probably something better addressed in the Judiciary Committee next, but I wanted to ask it. Is not having a license plate, a front license plate at this time, a violation a violation that would be a violation of someone's probation and therefore send them back to jail under not following all the rules of the traffic laws of the state by any chance?
Mr. Chairman, I do know that when persons are on probation, depending on whether it's state or federal, they may have stipulations where they're to obey all laws. So technically it could be a instrumentation type of incident to where it could be reported to a probation officer.
Thank you, Lieutenant Olson. I appreciate that answer.
You're welcome, sir.
Do you have any other questions at this time before we go to public testimony? Doesn't look like it. All right, so thank you, committee members. There'll be a chance afterwards. I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony on House Bill 166. Public testimony is officially opened. Do we have anybody in the room? Nope. Do we have anybody online to call in? No, we don't. Thank you, Ms. Truitt. I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony at this time. Public testimony is closed on House Bill 166. So, like I said before, we're going to go ahead and set this bill aside today, have an amendment deadline for Friday at 1 p.m. this coming Friday. And the plan now is to bring the legislation forward again on Tuesday the 27th. I believe we might have that. We'll make another opportunity for invited testimony for anybody else at that time who contacts the bill sponsor or the committee to hear that legislation as well. So, without further questions today, again, that amendment deadline is Friday at 1 o'clock. Thank you, everybody, for coming to join us today for the House Transportation Committee. We're going to go ahead and adjourn at 1:59 p.m. without further business.